North Idaho News of the Week is brought to you in part by Evergreen Realty, commercial and residential property listings. Online at evergreen-realty.com. Good morning. You've tuned in to North Idaho News of the Week here on Panhandle Community Radio. This is 88.5 KRFY. I'm Jack Peterson, and I'm here in the studio with Chris Bessler. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Jack. How are you today?
I'm doing very well. It continues to get chillier, but so far, no rain. So, you know, I'm doing okay.
Yeah. Well, actually, the rain has been good. We really needed it. But, we're kind of... feels like we're coming into a week of more typical autumn weather.
It looks like
cloudy skies, rain, cooler temperatures.
Yeah. Yes, it seems like that's what the forecast calls for. We'll see if we get a dry Halloween. That would be nice, but otherwise, yeah, here comes the rain. We're also joined here this morning by staff reporter for the Bonner County Daily Bee, Eric Welch. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning, Jack.
Nice to have you here. Thanks for coming in this morning. I will run down what are our current top news stories. And I'll say that it does feel like everything's kind of building up towards that election on November 5th. The rest of everybody's kind of holding their breath and not a whole lot of really controversial news in the papers lately. But we mentioned this last week, but we'll be talking more about it. The Idaho Transportation Department's new plan for the US 95 highway expansion in Sagal. Eric covered that story for the Daily Bee and can kind of provide us, hopefully, with some more details on what all that will entail. Early voting is now open for the November 5th election. You can vote now and has been open since Monday. Today is the last day to request an absentee ballot. You have until 5 p.m. today. If you have an internet connection, probably the easiest way is voteidaho.gov or call the county clerk's office for more information about that. You can request an absentee ballot up until 5 p.m. today to vote in this year's election. The Bonner County EMS, Emergency Medical Services, their new location has officially cut the ribbon, and they approved the installation of a baby box. I'll ask Eric a little bit more about what exactly a baby box is, but this will be installed at their new location, 521 South Division, which is where the EMS is moving. And this goes back to the October 15th meeting of the Bonner County Board of Commissioners. The Camp Bay easement motion was tabled at the meeting. This is regarding that development at Camp Bay, which has been a point of controversy for, it seems like about, I think we determined it was about 5 years since that really rose to public consciousness. The Board of County Commissioners tabled a motion and declined to sign on an easement for a public access road to Lake Pondere and to a 50-foot portion of the shoreline that the public will have access to. This seems to me like kind of the last step to finalize the process. It's hard to say whether this is going to have any real effect, but they've tabled it to I think allow the attorneys to look into possible. I think it was a law enforcement related issue. The sheriff declined, said that the sheriff's department would not be intervening in any disputes about the use of that that strip of land, and so who is responsible for enforcing those rules is, I guess, the question, and the county commission wanted to look into it before they signed off on that easement. The meeting also drew a good deal of public comment, I believe, or public, at least, interest in participation. Eric, you covered the story. Did you view the meeting either in person or online? Did you take a look at how that went down?
Yeah, I was there in person for that meeting, and that was definitely the Camp Bay discussion of that final easement agreement was definitely the biggest issue at that particular meeting.
Yeah. Let's provide a little bit of context for listeners who may not be familiar with the whole controversy. Chris, you've been paying attention as much as anyone, but I would think this goes back, this is a development that the county approved, not the current slate of county commissioners. In fact, none of the county commissioners who will be seated in January will be those who approved this transfer to a development corporation that is planning a new development at Camp Bay. The loss of access, of lake access, was caused a bit of a furor in town. At that point, they negotiated to allow an easement for public access, but the road will be closed. But it seems like there's probably still a little bit of a bad taste in some people's mouth about how the whole deal was arrived at. And now none of the county commissioners who are sitting voted, or who will be sitting in January, will have voted for that in the first place. But it's also, the deal is kind of sealed at this point. Is that more or less correct?
Yeah. I think you probably got it there. So the Camp Bay Road had provided access to the lake for over a century. There was at one point back in the late 1800s, maybe into the early 1900s, I'm not sure, a place for boats to, that actually some of the old steamboats that used to go around on the lake, and it was the most efficient way to get around in those days because the roads and trails were so bad. There was a landing place there for them. And so it went way back there. That was contested by the owner of the property. The property was owned by the Green family. When the parents died, there was a dispute among the siblings, and one of the siblings got ownership of the property, and he's the one that that cut the deal with the developer to buy the property, and developer wanted to turn the road into a private road, so they approached the county and asked for the county to vacate it. And the county went along with that, and there was a dispute about whether there was really public access there, whether there was, you know, legal public access via that road, or it had just, you know, been something that the neighbors had used for a century and without actually the, you know, ownership there. So it went back and forth. It went to the district court twice, and the folks that were opposed to vacating the road, and we should say that the access to the lake, it ended right at the lake, the road did, and it was only a 50-foot wide piece of property that was contended to be in the public domain. But that does give access to people to come down there and launch their kayaks or, you know, swim in the lake. So anyways, went back and forth. You kind of summed it up there. The district, when it finally came down to it, the commissioners said that they were vacating it, and they felt it was in the public interest because they wouldn't have to maintain that half mile of road that goes down there. The private developer would maintain it if it was vacated, and that for them constituted the public interest. The judge, when it finally came down to it, said, well, they did cite that this was in the public interest, and the commissioners have the authority to make that decision as long as it is in the public interest. And so she left it with the county commissioners. And now it's interesting that, as you mentioned, Jack, none of the new commissioners we're going to have were in part of that decision. And I've been interviewing the candidates here on KRFY. You can actually go to our website and hear the side-by-side interviews with all the commissioner candidates for districts 1 and 3 that are going to be on the ballot this time. And that's one of the questions I did ask them. Had you been in office, how would you have gone on this? Because it is kind of a, you know, private properties versus the public interest question. All four of the candidates that are going to be on the ballot said, well, you know, they think that they're pretty sure they would have voted to maintain the public access there. Mm-hmm. So, and the question now, the way it was resolved, of course, is that the road will be closed, but there will be a trail. Yeah. So there will still be public access via trail. It's just that people that could previously drive to the lake, if, you know, if a handicapped person in a wheelchair could access the lake there, or people with boats, people with fishing gear, you know, they're going to have to walk a half mile or more down to get there. So there, and it's interesting, Kathy LaFour sent a letter to the commissioners this past week, and she's one of the siblings. Her parents were the ones that originally owned the property. And she says, you know, she writes in her letter, our mother, Jean Green, did not want the property developed and sold. She wanted it to remain in the family for her descendants and maintained in its rural state for the community's benefit. Out of respect for our mother's wishes, I voted against selling the family property to M3. That's the developer. Mm-hmm. And she goes on to raise some questions about whether M3 properly notified shareholders and some other technical questions. I don't think that it rises to the level. I have no idea if this rises to the level that the commissioners could revisit the whole question of vacating the road. It seems like it's a done deal, but that's as much as I know, Jack.
Well, and that brings us up to at least the October 15th meeting, Eric. How did that go? What went down around this? What was the discussion at that time?
Yeah, I think you alluded to it a little bit where you were talking about some ambiguity or some questions about who would be responsible for, you know, enforcing laws or rules in the area. That's kind of what led the commissioners to table it for the time being. I think specifically they were looking at kind of a clause in the agreement that listed some rules that included no alcohol or tobacco use on the trail and certain hours of use, you know, for the trail. I think no nighttime use was one of the rules. And they were a little bit concerned about a component of that clause that said that if the county failed to enforce those rules and then they received some written notices from the property owner, that the property owner could then kind of take measures to enforce those rules themselves. And I think some people were a little bit concerned that that if that were to happen, that could result in a loss or a partial loss of public access to that trail.
And the sheriff's department, I think the sheriff himself said that they would enforce the law, but as far as these individual rules where there's no, correct me if I'm wrong, if I'm reading the story, the coverage correctly, that if there's a violation of the law, the sheriff's department is prepared to intervene. But if there's a violation of the rules, like say the curfew, which there's no curfew in the county on the, you know, there's no countywide curfew, the sheriff's department doesn't intend to enforce that. Or if there's a dispute about what the rules are, the sheriff's department doesn't intend to intervene. Basically.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. Which obviously, I guess raises the questions. The public response to this at the time, the meeting was well attended, I think?
Certainly. Yeah. And there were a number of people, I think, that kind of voiced their frustration with the overall progress of the whole Camp Bay discussion, which has been going on for years now, ever since the vacation of the road and all the legal components after that. And so it is does seem to be kind of nearing the end, at least for now, of the whole process. But I think a lot of people were there in part just to kind of voice their frustration with the way that this has been handled the whole time.
Yeah. Have you, I guess, heard of anything or any indication that this is not a settled issue, that this, you know, may go back to court, or there's any outcome likely other than the one I think we've all been expecting, which is that the development will proceed and there will be the easement, but no road access?
Yeah, that's what I've heard. And as far as I understand it, as soon as the commissioners and the developer come to an agreement on that final easement, that path, that footpath down to the lakeshore is pretty much done at this point. And so I believe that that will be then open to the public who can then access the lake.
Yeah, it could be open November 1st, like next Friday, I think is what the date I saw.
That's what they were going for, but I think this is going to slow it down now.
I believe so.
Well, okay. Anything else we need to say about that that right now? Any other news on the subject?
Not at this point, I don't think.
Okay. Well, let's talk about this big, the latest from the Idaho Transportation Department, the Sagal Highway development. This is another story that's been going on for a while. There was a proposal for a major bypass last year. That was their kind of the last plan that the ITD brought up that faced significant public opposition, and the ITD withdrew that plan in light of the opposition, I think, especially because one factor that comes to my mind is that the proposed route of the highway would have gone right next to the Sagal Elementary School. Am I looking at the map right, that what they'd be, the new proposal basically keeps the highway more or less where it is, but adds additional lanes and adds some infrastructure underpasses for the cross streets and some frontage roads?
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. The kind of the main concept is that it more or less follows the path of the existing road. Mm-hmm. The highway would be expanded to a 4-lane divided highway instead of 2 lanes from the Long Bridge down to, I think it's Dufert Road. It's about a 6-mile corridor. And each side, there would be a frontage road running the length of that.
Yeah. And then it hits the Long Bridge and would be condensed down to 2 lanes. I think it comes up every once in a while when the ITD holds their public hearings that people think the Long Bridge itself is or could use some improvements.
And that was definitely something that, you know, a concern that people had was that that may act as kind of a bottleneck because it's if that bridge is existing. And based on the information on kind of the project website from ITD, that department said that their intention is to first expand the highway corridor and then after that look towards expanding the Long Bridge into 4 lanes.
Okay. Right now there's a stop light at Sagal Road that went in, I think, relatively recently, within the last couple of years. Would that be removed, I suppose? And Sagal Road would have an underpass and then the frontage roads system along both sides?
Yeah. Yep. So the stoplight would be removed, and also that turnaround point near Lakeshore Drive and the Long Bridge that was installed.
Okay.
I want to say not too long ago. That would also be removed. ITD on their project website kind of described those as temporary measures. Mm-hmm. And there will be, 2 underpasses. And if this plan goes through, there would be 2 underpasses and then 2 interchanges along that stretch.
What do the interchanges look like where the road traffic meets the highway, or street traffic, I guess?
Yeah, the frontage road traffic. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. So that's just an access point, as far as I understand it, for
like a merge lane, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. And kind of essentially an on ramp onto the highway.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Sort of like in it seems a to mimic kind of what happened in Athol a few, this would have been before your time, Eric, but maybe 5 or so years ago when they put in that kind of bypassed Athol. What's the public response to this? How have the meetings been going? Friendly to ITD or less so?
Yeah, it was this most recent one, which was October 16th. I want to say that was last Wednesday. Was really well attended. You know, it took place at Sagal Elementary there. And, you know, ITD had some of the project engineers and some other representatives there. And they kind of laid out a big diagram of the corridor on these tables. And everybody was kind of, you know, packed around it and you know, kind of tracing it out and trying to envision it. And I think that kind of something that's run the whole length of this discussion about expanding the Sagal Highway is that a lot of locals would like to see lower speed limits and stoplights in the area. But because it's kind of a corridor for a lot of commercial traffic, ITD is kind of resistant to the idea of really slowing down that corridor. So I think that's kind of one of the major differences of opinion between a lot of local residents and the department.
What would the speed limit would be? Hold the, right now it's 45 as you pass through Sagal, I think. It drops down to 45, then picks up to 55 as you approach the Long Bridge. Would it be, but as you come into Sagal, you're coming up at, I think, 60. If you're coming to the north, I think you're coming up at 65 miles an hour, if my memory is right about that. Definitely during the four-lane portions of Highway 95, the speed limit's 65. Do they say what they intend the speed limit to be during that spot, especially if they're taking out stops? If they're taking out stoplights and adding lanes, it seems like their idea is to increase the speed of traffic.
Pretty sure that would be the idea. Right, and that's why they want to create the frontage roads to restrict access from all these little side roads that come on.
Would it be coming up to 65?
You know, I can't recall exactly, but they have a pretty comprehensive kind of project website that's linked in my article and accessible on the web. So that would that information is probably on the website.
Yeah, I think this would leave very little of Highway 95 in between Sandpoint and Coeur d'Alene as a two-lane road. It would be at this point. It would be seems like most of it would be a four-lane highway. If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I think the plan is to make it four lane all the way up.
The whole way through, yeah. That's kind of the
then they hit the Long Bridge, of course, and that it comes back down to two lanes unless they build another bridge. Mm-hmm. But then you get to the bypass, and you'd be back down to two lanes. So, it's hard to envision what might happen there, but...
Yeah,
I'm sure that's quite a number of years off with a bridge happening, if that's going to happen.
Yeah.
I imagine, Eric, that was a pretty big topic. Yeah.
Yeah, and I should say that the department has emphasized that right now they're doing what's called an environmental reevaluation. Mm-hmm. And so they're still several steps away from, you know, ever constructing an expansion to the highway or, you know, even further off from an expansion to the Long Bridge.
Mm-hmm. Right now there's no stoplight that I can think of between the north end of Coeur d'Alene and then when you hit the Sagal stoplight on or going north, and if they took that out, then you'd get all the way to Ponderé before you hit a stoplight on Highway 95, I think. Well, okay. Hey, tell us about the bottom.
The baby box.
Yeah,
that's what I'm curious about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that was at the most recent commissioner meeting. Commissioners voted to approve, I think it was the way to phrase it exactly was like a lease agreement for this device called a baby box, which will be installed at the new EMS station. And all the funding for it was provided by a local nonprofit, which was Life Choices Pregnancy Center.
Okay. And this is a spot where you can, where a parent can, or an adult can drop off an unwanted baby, basically.
Yeah. So it's
that sounds so weird. I gotta say.
Yeah. It is. Yeah.
It's as far as I understand it. Mm-hmm. So Idaho has had existing laws where there are, you know, locations that I think that are called safe havens, where mm-hmm. this includes EMS station, hospital, fire station, as far as I understand, where they're required to, you know, if a parent comes forth with an infant, they're required to take that child in. And so this, in the most recent legislative session, Idaho approved the use of these devices called baby boxes, where it's kind of a device that gets installed in the wall of the building, and then kind of in an effort to increase the anonymity aspect of it, and I think encourage people who are considering this to do it, where they can place the infant inside this kind of climate controlled box, and it will mm-hmm. sound an alarm and call 911, mm-hmm. And then, you know, somebody then on the inside will be able to take that infant,
right,
and then take them to the hospital and whatever else.
So, has that actually happened here? People abandon their baby here in our county?
Since I've been here, haven't heard anything about that, and I think the commissioners definitely kind of emphasize that they're not sure if this device, you know, will even ever be used, but that they thought that it was a good idea and that it was, a good thing for the county to have, I guess.
Mm.
Hmm. Okay. Well, where are we now? About 10 days from the election, something along those lines, close to it, 10, 11 days. We will be back next Friday for one last North Idaho News of the Week before the election. Any election coverage, any interesting election news that you've been covering, Eric? Anything in the paper or anything coming up that we should be aware of, look out for?
Yeah, not too much. Our voter guide is mm-hmm. going to be coming very soon. So that'll kind of have some information, some statements from the candidates, mm-hmm. and hopefully that will help kind of inform your vote. And then otherwise, you know, we're just waiting for, like everybody else, for the the outcome.
For the shoe to drop. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we are going to be interviewing next Wednesday a couple folks, pro and con, on the question of the Proposition 1, the Open Primaries Initiative, here on 88.5 KRFY, the morning show at 8 a.m. So you could tune in for that. And I will mention that there's also going to be a Proposition 1 debate held next Friday, November 1st, at the Regeneration Calvary Chapel, which I think is in Ponderay. And it's going to feature Luke Mayville, who is with Reclaim Idaho, and one of the organizations that put forth the initiative. He's going to be speaking in favor of the Prop 1, and Scott Herndon is going to be speaking in opposition, our state senator, Scott Herndon. So that will be interesting. That's going to be 6 p.m. And if it worked mm-hmm. out, we might be able to broadcast that. We don't know if we'll be able to do that. We're contacting the folks that are putting it on. We're going to find out mm-hmm. here in the next couple of days. We'll let people know.
Hopefully so. I think that'd be good for people to hear. This is there's both kind of both pro and con, I know, have held their own town halls and forums. I have not heard of one where they're going to be kind of squaring off like this.
Actually, they had one in Boise, the Idaho Statesman. Sure. Luke mm-hmm. spoke in favor, and an individual, I'm not even sure if he was from Idaho, but from the national mm-hmm. National organization that's been opposing mm-hmm. ranked choice voting and open primaries. Mm-hmm. That was put on by the Idaho Statesman, and it was actually telecast, I believe as well,
yeah.
Or at least it was streamed. So, so we'll see if we will be able to do that here on KRFY for our local one.
Well, I hope so. Yes, stay tuned for more information about that. It is that time, I suppose.
We should mention that early voting's underway right now.
That's right.
So you can go vote right now at the county election office at 1500 Highway 2. And it's going to continue until next Friday, November 1st. And then the early voting period is over after that. We're all voting on Tuesday, November 5th, Election Day.
Mm-hmm. You can register on Election Day in the state of Idaho as well if you're not registered to vote yet.
Yeah, you can't register right now.
Right.
Pre-registration is closed, so you would have to register at your polling place.
Mm-hmm.
But you can do that if you're not registered. And this is a good election to put in your vote on.
Yeah. Eric, any particular of the local races that you've got your eye on? Anything you like? You're excited to see how this one turns out, or anything like that? Or
yeah, I think it's just exciting that we have state senator, we have representatives and local candidates for commissioner offices too. So kind of at the of course with the presidential, we have the federal level, we have candidates at the state level, and then also at the county level. So it's cool to see that there are, lots of changes coming, maybe.
Yeah. Well, we're going to play some music now because it's that time. Thank you, Eric, for joining us. Your coverage of all sorts of local events can be found in the Bonner County Daily Bee on newsstands 6 days a week here in Sandpoint and around the county.
Or by subscription.
Hey,
the best way to get it.
That's right. Get it bright and early. And online as well at BonnerCountyDailyBee.com. Thanks so much for your time this morning.
Yeah, thanks, Jack.
Okay. Well, here we go with Otto's Eclectic Mix and your regularly scheduled programming here on Panhandle Community Radio. Good morning.